to item number two, which is our director's report. Director Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Good afternoon. I've chosen to provide the report from here because I have a few slides when I get to the last topic on my report. I'm just going to cover four areas here this afternoon, spending the majority of my time on the portion of the report that deals with implementation of our Wolf Conservation Management Plan. There are a couple other items that I wanted to touch on. The first being the issue associated with Mazama pocket gophers. It's a big issue here in Thurston County. The United States Department of Fish and Wildlife Service is due to make a decision this month on whether to propose this species for listing under the Endangered Species Act. They're doing this at least in part pursuant to a lawsuit that was brought forth by a group known as Wildlife Guardian. And as part of that settlement agreement, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has to do a review on something in excess of 400 species. And they've separated those species into different categories and taking each category at a time over about a year's period, I believe. And the pocket gopher is in the first wave of species. A lot of concern here locally, and coming from the Port of Olympia, primarily as a result of the implications of a potential listing on the Olympia Airport. City of Tumwater, the Tumwater School District is having big problems trying to find suitable locations for expansion of their facilities without being encumbered by pocket gophers being present. The local Chamber of Commerce, as well as the Association of Washington Businesses, are all very concerned about this issue. In addition to that, we've received letters from a number of legislators who are also expressing concern about this issue. Recently, we arranged for a meeting between those entities and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the regional director, Robin Thornton, their state director, Ken Berg, and several other staff members joined us with representatives of these entities to discuss the issue. And of particular concern to us is that we have assembled some new information. We've discovered pocket gophers in areas outside the area known as the plateau. There's a question about whether these are subspecies, and if so, how many subspecies are there? And we urge them to delay making their decision until they had the opportunity to review all of the new data, which we've provided them. And in addition, we have a number of additional surveys going on this fall, and we thought that the decision could be better informed with that information. I can't say that we got a real favorable response, given that this species is part of the settlement agreement, and although we did provide them an example where there's another species in the first batch that they delayed, but they didn't delay the final decision, just the decision about whether or not to propose listing. So I wanted you to be aware of our activity there. Greg Sherrato, in particular, from Wildlife Program, has been the lead on that and was instrumental in our meeting. The other item is we recently signed a memorandum of understanding with the Tulalip tribes. This is something, the work that we started back in 2005. And we're working in partnership with the tribes to recover naturally produced Chinook salmon in the Snohomish River. And the MOU reflects the commitment we share for the role our hatchery programs can play in support of our fisheries and how we can operate them consistent with rebuilding of wild populations in the basin. The MOU also provides additional steps to improve recovery through setting program guidelines, such as increasing productivity to promote recovery of naturally produced Chinook salmon in the Snohomish system. It also provides for sustainable fishing opportunities, integration of our hatchery programs between the co-managers, and this also forms the basis of finalizing our hatchery genetic management plan for this system. Speaking of hatchery genetic management plans, we just this week submitted to NOAA Fisheries our HGMP hatchery genetic management plan for the Chinook hatchery program on the Elwha River. It's a draft. The purpose of the program is to ensure the preservation of the genetic legacy of Elwha Chinook and promote rapid recovery after the removal of the dam. The Chinook hatchery program was reviewed by the Hatchery Scientific Review Group in the winter of 2012 and in a public comment period in the summer of 2012. And these review processes have resulted in significant improvements to the HGMP from what its original form. One of the examples of improvements was in the area of marking of the fish. So beginning in 2013, all fish released with a coated, will be released with coated wire tag, so we're talking about 400,000. And we will have a portion of those receive an adipose clip. I'm sorry, the 400,000 number is the number with a coated wire tag, and we'll have about 14% of those with an adipose clip, which is about 14% of the production. The idea here is we want to minimize fishery impacts initially on this stock so we can get as much seeding initially into the system as we can. And then it calls for, beginning in 2016, all fish released will be marked with an adipose clip. National Park Service, NOAA Fisheries, staff from the Lower Elwha Tlalim Tribe, as you may remember, have been sued by the Wild Fish Conservancy and several other organizations as it relates to hatchery operations in the Elwha. The lawsuit alleges that the defendants have failed to comply with the requirements of the Endangered Species Act and National Environmental Protection Act, otherwise known as NEPA, while operating the Lower Elwha Tribal Hatchery Program. So this is for our facility. The tribe is in the process of completing their HGMP for their facility. Periodically, I'd like to give you just an overview of emergency rules that have been promulgated through the director's office pursuant to the delegation of authority that I'm provided by the commission. And so for since January 1, leading up to, I think, yesterday, we had 184 emergency rule filings. Just in some of the categories, 64 of those had to do with commercial fisheries, everything from crab to urchins to salmon troll to Columbia River salmon fisheries below Bonneville to forage fish, those kinds of things. In the game fish steelhead category, there were 24 of those, 184 were in that category. 41 were specific to salmon fisheries. We had 8 that were specific to kids fishing, opening particular lakes for kids only. There were 31 that were kind of bottom fish, halibut, and some shellfish regs like razor clam openings. And then there's 16 of them that are wildlife related and or miscellaneous categories like the two-pole endorsement piece. So anybody that wants a list of these, just to, you can see how many we've done for each area and what river or system that it was applicable to, happy to provide those to you. So now to the item I'll spend most of my time on in my report, which also is the area I'm spending most of my time on. is in the area of our implementation of our WOLF plan. I gave you what I hope was a pretty comprehensive report on their conference call last Friday, particularly dealing with the wedge pack. So I'm not going to, there'll be some of this that'll be repetitive to that, although there's some additional things that have happened in the wedge pack, even up to and including about an hour ago, that I'll try to make you aware of. So just as a reminder, this is an update of the wolf packs that we either have confirmed. So those that are in the lighter blue are confirmed packs. Those that have the polygons rather than the circles, are those polygons indicate the range of that particular pack based on the collars that we have of one or more of the animals in each one of those packs. So you can see, obviously, that over in our eastern region, we have the three recovery regions here represented on the map, and in the eastern region, we now have six confirmed packs up in northeast, another two that are suspected, and then we have the one in down in the Blue Mountain area, and then we have, you can see, two confirmed there in the northern Cascade area, Lookout and Tianaway, with another suspected pack that we've named Hosamine up in the border with British Columbia. So I want to talk a little bit about the trapping status. We've spent a lot of time, as you know, we've added a number of staff positions to try to get ourselves ahead in terms of monitoring, if not ahead, at least caught up with the monitoring of where we have packs and trying to get members of those packs, get collars fitted. So you can see here, we've trapped in 9 of those 12 pack areas, so not just in where we've got confirmed, but where we have suspected. You can see what we've accomplished there, where we've had success. And you can also see that we've captured 7 wolves in these 4 packs. And I understand that the Colville tribe captured another animal here just, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but very recently. So they'll have another one of their wolves that has a collar. And then we've got radio collars on 5 of those 8 confirmed packs. Sorry. So one of the issues had to do with our reporting of observations, and in particular up in that northeast part of the state, and working specifically with Stevens County, trying to get everything on the same, in the same database. And we've had some real challenges there technically, not at the policy level, but technically. And we've, as it happens, yesterday got, my understanding, all of those technical glitches resolved, and we now have a single reporting database for reporting of wolf observations. And this is the report that the public gets an opportunity to fill out if they observe a wolf, and then that goes into our database that's accessible by the public. A lot of work in the camera monitoring parts. Just so get you used to what you're looking at here, the green polygons is where we've had WDFW cameras deployed. We have contracted with Jeff Flood, and you can see the blue area, circles and polygons are areas where he has cameras deployed. Conservation Northwest also has some cameras deployed, and you can see in the orange where those are. And then the survival school area cameras, they've also got a few out that overlap in areas where we have other cameras out there. So a lot of cameras out there giving us some really good information about where we have wolves, and helping us identify not specifically the size of the pack, but in some cases gives us an idea of how big that pack might be. Over in regions 2 and 3, you can see here with a lot of effort there. The trail camera stations indicated in the red, the track survey routes, so routes of animals where we've got collars on them. You can see that Wolf report, so areas where we've had members of the public reporting to the department or other county resources where they've seen wolves, both from looking at it from a 2012 perspective in the green, as well as the reports that we've had during the time frame from 2008 through 2011. Wolf depredations on livestock, and I just want to make sure everybody's aware that the term depredation under our glossary of terms in our wolf management plan is both animals that have either been killed or injured. So I think sometimes people think it's just those that have been killed, but it's both. Depredation investigations, we've tried to put a lot of rigor around our depredation investigations, and at the same time tried to do the investigations in a timely way. As you're aware, we've had specialized training. We have teams made up of staff from both enforcement and wildlife. We have our new depredation manual and form. We have an internal review process, which includes U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and U.S. Department of Agricultural Wildlife Services. We also have a panel of three external experts, but it all comes back to the field investigators to make the final determination on whether a depredation was either confirmed, suspected, probable, or inconclusive, or identified as another animal in the case, for like example, like a cougar. So we've heard a lot about depredations, and here's just gives you an idea relative to the depredations that we know about.
Excuse us. Commissioner Perry, do you have a question?
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt, Phil, but on the slide just before this one, the bottom item, the determination of whether a kill is done by wolves or something else is made by the people on the ground that take a look at it.
The field staff that originally responded to the depredation event are the ones that file and collect the initial information that then goes out to our internal team, goes out to this external expert review, and then all taking all those things into consideration along with what they saw, it is the field staff then that makes the final determination on whether it was a confirmed wolf attack, it was a probable wolf attack, or it was an attack from another type of animal, cougar, bear, whatever it might be, or whether it was indeterminate.
Could you just briefly indicate who is on those external review groups? Maybe not individuals, but organizations that are part of that. Is it all department folks or
the external?
Yeah.
No. The external review is we have three individuals that have been identified in their field as experts that we have that have agreed to review the evidence, pictures, any write-ups, description of the events, and then they provide their comments back to our internal team as to what they believe caused the depredation.
Thank you.
And frankly, that's been one of the areas where we've been challenged. I don't mean legally, but challenged because some of these are not clear-cut. Some of them are, we had one, we had actually two depredations of animals last Thursday that were, one was clearly a wolf. It was characterized actually by Carter Niemeyer as the, quote, smoking gun. We've had a number of others where we've had debate internally, and we've certainly had from the external reviewers differences of opinion, some saying no, that wasn't a wolf, or one saying, well, that could have been. So we've been criticized, I think it's fair to say, by some individuals and groups that we have concluded that it was a confirmed depredation when not all of the people who reviewed the information, in particular the external experts, didn't all conclude that it was confirmed wolf kill or depredation injury.
Commissioner Duvia.
Excuse me. Thanks, Madam Chair. I think that process is a good one, Director. However, it has, as you're aware, there are so-called or experts that we bring in has been where we've, I think, in the press-wise, have been where they weren't confirmed, coming from conversations with those people, from my knowledge, which has misled the public significantly in terms of what's really happening on the ground. Knowing that this is just the beginning, when we start having six or seven of these done in a week, when we get Okanagan and Wenatchee and Blue Mountains and Mount Rainier and all these things happening, as we talked on our call, maybe looking at structuring designated committees in those local areas, that maybe the sheriff, a veterinarian, a biologist, an enforcement officer, or something, so that we can have consistency and a little more speediency in terms of determining whether or not it is a wolf problem or not, might be worth us having that conversation. I'm very apprehensive about how well this current system is working. I think it's creating a bad image for us in some cases. It's not giving us consistency in others. I think those are on the ground, as you said, and you come back to. We know that, you know that, but the public doesn't quite seem to know that we're taking a heavier weight on those people that are actually at the scene to do that. So,
yeah, I mean, we will, I mean, for this example, this last one, we turned it around in 24 hours. The second kill was probably the most difficult and took the most time. We ultimately had our veterinary look at it, and there was a lot of difference of opinion. My personal view is that having the external review brings a lot of credibility to our process and to our determinations. We don't necessarily have to agree with them all the time, as we've demonstrated. But this last, frankly, the one that occurred last Thursday, where we had people like Carter Niemeyer, pictured here, coming out and saying, yes, absolutely, this was a result of a wolf attack, has put us in a much better position to move forward. We'll see. We had a lot of, as you well know, had a lot of opposition and criticism to the decision I made to move forward with removing up to four. We put that directive back out on the ground on Tuesday of this week. I've had subsequent discussions, as have senior staff from Wildlife Program, with some of the people that were very critical of us last time around. And at least the conversations I have had, and I can't say this is true for all the conversations, particularly with several of the legislators that were questioning our decision, put us in a much better place. So I understand differences of opinion and conclusions on whether it was a wolf or not. We're going to have those. We're going to have those internally. We're going to have them if we have external review. But so I won't. I know we're. I don't want to take too much time. I know you got a big agenda ahead of here, but I hear what you're saying. So on the depredation piece, of the depredations that we know about, and remember that the cattle are still out on the allotments and grazing in areas where they're very difficult to see in some cases, and we won't really know what level of losses some livestock owners may have had until they bring their cattle out of those allotments and begin counting up what they have. But these are the depredations on livestock that we know about up to this point in time. Obviously, the area of the wedge has been the area where we've had the biggest number of depredations that we know about. This is just a list of the PACs, and as you can see, Lookout, Huckleberry, and Wedge is where we've had them that were documented up to this point in time that you saw on the map, the previous slide, but you can see that the Wedge is at 10, and it's now at 12 as of today, two more today. Don't know, I can't add the with certainty to the number the 2 to the 10 just yet. The investigation will be ongoing, but so we'll wait and see and get that the investigation concluded, but it may well go to 12 before the week's out. This is the map of the area we call the Wedge. The red is the various allotments, U.S. Forest Service allotments. You can see the yellow dotted line is the area that of demarcation where our collared male has been detected. Obviously, you can see the U.S.-Canada border there. The yellow stars or where we've had livestock depredation or injury. You may recall the graber over in the left-hand side there of the in the center. The graber is where we had that enclosure in the month of May and put Flattery out and electrified fence, and we still had wolves going up to that area. And then the area where we've had the depredation, and then those circles you'll see are the rendezvous sites, and you can see those rendezvous sites have changed. They change from time to time. We've put what I will characterize as a lot of pressure on this pack, which may have contributed to the reason they've moved. There's also been some activity by the rancher taking wolves off one or more of these allotments that may have also contribute to them moving from one place to another. Here's just a list of the interactions. The one I mentioned on Graber, which I thought it was May, it was April. You can see Diamond M Ranch, which is immediately to the east of Graber. We've had a number of issues there, we've got two more calves that were found, one that was found an hour ago that was a fresh kill, another one that was found a few hours ago that looked to be 3 or 4 days old. There's been some questioning as to whether or not sufficient non-lethal tools have been utilized to try to change the what I'll characterize as a habituation to livestock depredations of the Wedge pack. But this year, we've had the ranchers taken a number of steps, including separating young calves from wolves by pasturing the cow calf areas in areas without wolves until the cows were older. The calves were older, so larger, harder to prey upon. They've had cowboys, probably shouldn't call these range riders, those are in a little different category, but what we'll characterize as cowboys, employees of the livestock operator, 5 of them out on the range every day. We did the turbo Flattery around the Graber enclosure. The rancher has been careful to get those injured calves off the open area and into corralled areas to ensure that they gave them a chance to heal up, but also potentially diminishing the possibility that they have been killed. And then we've spent an enormous amount of effort up there trying to trap 45 days with about 20 traps out each day, but it's clear that pack has become wise, trap-wise. We've even seen them where they've pawed around the trap. but not stepped on it. And then, as you know, we did catch and release two wolves. One was a pup we put an ear tag in back in July. We later found that pup dead here several weeks ago. Cause of death has not been determined. And then, of course, we have the alpha male that's collared that continues to give us up-to-date information on the location. And we've also put our folks as well as Wildlife Service staff up on the ground with all the non-injurious harassment tools to utilize if they detected wolves near the livestock. And then finally, and that's in particular the last few days where we've been sharing information with the Diamond M Ranch operator. I mean, we've been on the phone with him, I think, three times today, making him aware of where the alpha male is, at least. Here's some lethal tools. We have these two Cotton Act permits. One was to the Mr. Graber. The other one was to the owner of the Diamond M Ranch. Neither of those have been used. And then we targeted two wolves for lethal removal. That effort resulted in removing one non-breeding pack member. And then August 17th for the next 12 days, we had crews out every day trying to remove up to four wolves, and they were unsuccessful. They got close, saw them, but didn't have clear targets. And then on Tuesday of this week, after we reviewed our information, talked about how many wolves we thought we had in the pack, how many had been seen at one time by our crews out there in the previous 12 days. And then we also had the Thursday, two additional calves that were injured, one severely. We put out the directive out to staff to resume operations to try to remove up to four members of the pack. So that's what's going on right now, and actually we've just moved our team down to the area where we have a pasture area that has a large number of livestock in it, is where we found these two dead calves today. And so we're deploying our team down in that, and it's on private land. I've been communicating almost hourly with the rancher, have permission to be on his land. He's both appreciative and very cooperative with us here as we go through today.
And Director Anderson, just to clarify, the lethal removal, again, will not target breeding pairs? Is that correct?
The directions are do not shoot the alpha male that has the collar. That's number one. The information we're getting from that member is imperative to us until we get a collar on another member. And if they can avoid targeting the alpha female, great. But directions are right now is we want up to four animals removed, particularly given the events of the last 24 hours, not to mention what happened last Thursday. So green light, with the exception if you see the collared male. I mean, if it's obvious that you got the alpha female and it's not a younger animal, but we need to get this pack cut down in the terms of the number of animals that are there.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I don't know if you'd heard of it. I heard that very recently that the first seven cows came off of Roy Graber's allotment and came back on his, and six of the seven were dry. They haven't found any carcasses or anything yet, but they're pretty certain that they're significantly dry, so there's a problem with them. So, but I haven't got that confirmed greatly, but that's the word's out. And there's possibly a third kill site that Bill has found from an old that's way beyond recognition, but it shows the the area as well as the gut area where it was taking place and stuff. So things are picking up. And as I mentioned to you before, and I think others on the commission, September, October is where we're just beginning to find out what's going on up there. So I dread the count that's coming, and I just hope we're up for the task of coming, because this looks like it's significant.
So I'm almost wrapped up here, Madam Chair. I know I'm running over. Landowner agreements, I did want to bring your attention to some of the successes we're having with landowner agreements, and coming to the, some of the key elements of those include the use of proactive non-lethal measures that you can see here, everything from flattery to guard dogs, sanitation in that removing carcasses and bones, and range riders. We have one range rider that we've got with a landowner at the Smackout Pass, or excuse me, a rancher in the Smackout Pack area. We would provide up to $5,000 per livestock operator for these types of activity. Compensation is another big piece. Obviously, payments for confirmed and probable. We're working out how we might go about compensating for greater than normal losses where we can't document with a carcass, but obvious that we have losses that exceed historic levels for that particular operator. And under this category, up to $5,000 per livestock operator. Would also go with the agreement, goes with it, would come with a cotton yak kill permit. And we're targeting trying to get up to 10 contracts. We have three that are near what I'll call, characterize as near completion right now. The other work that we've been doing on from a compensation perspective is working with a group of livestock operators up in Northeast. And at the most recent meeting, which was last Thursday in Colville, which, of course, was dominated by conversations associated with the calves that had been attacked that day, but we did receive from Scott Nielsen from the Stevens County Cattlemen's Association a proposal on a compensation package. Again, trying to look at what other things can we do that go beyond having a dead calf to look at or a probable kill? What about these losses that we can't necessarily account for in terms of having a dead animal or carcass to look at? So there were some suggestions in their proposal. Just got it. I haven't had a chance to look at it. Steve Pizangra has it, and our team will be looking over that. But I think that's a big step, at least from my perspective, because we've been working on trying to get something in writing. It's a proposal, something to try to work with the livestock operators up there from a compensation perspective. So I'll close there. I know we can talk on this subject for a long time, but I wanted to give you the latest information that I had.
Thank you. Commissioner Perry.
You've talked about livestock losses, and that's extremely important. But when people have been out there, when the department people have been out there, they've been finding dead carcasses of deer and elk as well?
Thanks to Commissioner Perry. Not that I'm aware of. I can't categorically say they haven't found any, but if they've found them, I have not heard about them. That doesn't mean that hasn't happened, that's for sure. But
other questions? Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Anderson, I wanted to go back a moment to your discussion about the Elwha River and just to make sure I understood exactly. What is the total number of Chinook that the state hatchery being marked? And then I know you said it was a 14% mark rate. And the tribal hatchery, is that a federally funded hatchery? And if so, what's the mark rate on those fish?
Commissioner Carpenter, I don't have the specific information on that. I could do some math based on the numbers I have here. I think 400,000 was 20%, so that sounds like about 2 million production to me. So 400,000 had coated wire tags. 14% of those had, no, 14% of the total production had adipose fin clips. And then by 2016 is when we'll go to a 100% mark. I don't have, I'll get it for you, Commissioner Carpenter and Prebick. I'll get it. I think get it pretty quickly, but I don't have that information on my fingertips.
Okay, on that same subject, I think I was asked a couple weeks ago, what would be the fish that are now being seen returning? Are those strays, or were those planted at some point in their jacks, or what?
They're likely hatchery strays.
Okay.
I mean, we haven't had natural production, of course, above the dam. So we want to try to get some naturally occurring spawning activity going on up there. And then as we get through 3 years, well, almost through almost four years, we'll have a cycle. And then we can begin utilizing hatchery broodstock. We'll get those, all those fish marked, and we'll gradually move into that kind of a mode. And Commissioner Mankin may be better able to answer that than I am. Not sure.
Commissioner Mankin, you want to bring your mic up?
What would you have me talk about? About the HSRG?
If I missed any, did I reflect anything inaccurately?
No, I think you're right on.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any other comments, questions? I think I had one on wolves, too. We did have a good conversation during the conference call last week. It's very thorough. And I think the commission, everyone I heard speak then, signaled their strong support for your decision-making, for the department's activities, signaled appreciation to staff who are working very hard under the most intense pressure and challenge that we've faced. And I think we also heard during that conference call a number of commissioners speak out in dismay about the misinformation that was circulated by some of the stakeholder groups. So I appreciate this opportunity. The commission meetings present a great opportunity for the record to be set straight, for good, accurate information to be presented for public viewing. So just wanted to make that clear, our appreciation. And we did also talk, you brought it up an issue on Friday related to the intent of the management plan regarding the difference in language between the compensation standard and the lethal removal standard. And I think we talked about asking you to present a recommendation perhaps at this meeting regarding whether we should take action. I think at minimum, what you've been hearing from this commission is support for your decision making. We do not think you're misinterpreting the intent of our plan. I think if anyone disagrees with this, with what I've just said, this is a good opportunity to make it clear. But since it was our plan, we knew what we intended. This is an opportunity for us to give you feedback. And if you need more, if you need something in writing for the record, we're prepared to do that, too. But I think, and I also wanted to mention the policy statement that we adopted following the adoption of the plan. also gave you the flavor of our intentions in adopting that plan. And the flavor of this, I recall it, was this is going to be tough. We expect assertive management. So I think that's another signal. And that was on the record, in writing, and adopted by the full commission. So did you have any more thoughts about whether anything more is needed?
I do think that that the commissions should consider, not at this meeting. It wasn't properly noticed in our agenda, so plus we haven't had an opportunity to fully explore what could be done or should be done. But I did identify as you correctly noted, that before we can utilize lethal control, the language says, in part, to stop repeated depredation if it is documented that livestock has clearly been killed. So not just depredation, not injury and kill, it's killed. When you go to the next page, or in the plan, where under compensation, under confirmed, it says, confirmed means there is reasonable physical evidence to reasonable physical evidence that the dead or injured animal was actually attacked or killed by a wolf. So a reasonable physical evidence versus clear. This isn't a change that I think I would recommend you make lightly, nor do I think you would. But it is an area that it causes me some concern when we get to a point where we think lethal removal is needed. And remembering the goals of our plan that we're going to recover wolves to a self-sustaining population across their geographic range, and the second goal is that within that we're going to do so in a manner that minimizes losses to livestock and ungulate populations. So I think this deserves some more discussion. I did ask Joe Shorin, our senior assistant attorney general that's in charge of the Fish and Wildlife and Parks Division, about this topic. I do have some guidance from him, such that it would lead me to the conclusion that you could make a change in the plan if you so desired. So I think we need to talk about that a little bit more.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Anything more on the subject? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.